This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today, once again, we are interviewing Sean O'Brien, the CEO of NatureServe in Arlington, Virginia. It's a continuation of the interview of Sean that we did last week, but we didn't have enough time to complete it. So here once again is Sean O'Brien. Welcome, Sean.
NatureServe is primarily a resource of information that other organizations can access in helping them in their work to maintain biodiversity in the conservation of wildlife and ecosystems. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'm just going to say stop right there. That was nice.
Good. Okay, well, you talk about species taxonomy as you're facilitating the development of a common language among scientists. I gather that scientists like to give different names to different species or systems. You're trying to make that a regular universal application, right?
Right. So we all learn in high school biology about the Linnaean system for naming things. So that's the King Philip came over from Great Spain, right? Kingdom, phylum,
right.
Class, and all of that. And so we're most familiar with the genus and the species. So, you know, for humans, Homo sapiens. And it turns out that for a lot of species, especially plant species, it's easy to have two scientific names for something that some people might say is actually one species, not two species. Or there may be more than that. And there's a debate in the biological world that is sort of simplified to lumpers and splitters. And lumpers have a tendency to combine things into one species. And splitters look at something, some aggregation of plants or animals, and say, well, actually, that's two species or three species or four species. This is a really important part of conservation of rare species, because if you have a species and the consensus is that it's this one species, it might be very common, and you might not need to do specific conservation measures to protect it. However, if the scientific consensus is not settled, and it turns out that that species is two or three, or even in some cases that we know of, seven different species,
mm-hmm.
you might have a couple of common species and a couple of very, very rare species that you need to be very aware of and do a lot of work to protect. Mm-hmm. So NatureServe does a lot of work regularizing the taxonomy that is shared across all of the 63 programs that we work with, not necessarily to force them to use the same name, but mm-hmm. to have them have access to the information that there may be a different name or a different set of names mm-hmm. for something. Because in some cases, a different state may have a reason why they want to lump or split something. And a neighboring state may have a different reason for a different decision. And so making sure that people have that information allows us to make more effective use of our conservation dollars. Because if something is very common in North Carolina and rare in Virginia, Virginia might choose to spend its conservation dollars on a different species that's rare in both places. And so understanding that plants and animals and habitats don't care about state lines or country lines is a really important part of what we do, because we are able to make those comparisons across those state lines, which is not a common thing that states do typically.
And is the work that you do in that regard, is that universally accepted?
So because we're providing what we sometimes call the Rosetta Stone, or the translator between different concepts behind what some species is, we're able to say we're not necessarily taking a position on is this one species or seven species. We have the information to analyze it both ways. And that allows us to, again, be sort of an impartial holder of information that people can analyze, but have all the information. And that's the important part, is that they have access to the fact that this debate exists for this particular species.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about the Endangered Species Act. Is that universally accepted is it accepted across all the systems, the organizations in the United States?
The Endangered Species Act, which of course dates to the early 1970s and was a widely bipartisan bill that created probably the most powerful conservation legislation in the history of this country so far, says that we're going to protect species that are listed as endangered, and we're going to go to great lengths to protect these species. It's now 50 years old, the Endangered Species Act, and there's a new book out called The Codex of the Endangered Species Act, written by Lowell Bear. It is a great summary of the story of how we got the Endangered Species Act and all of the politics behind it. And there's a couple of other books coming out by Lowell on the Endangered Species Act that will be really interesting for people to read.
Because it's a
national law, all of the states, you know, are bound by it. Canada has their own Endangered Species Act that is similar in its power and strength, and allows for a lot of conservation action to happen up there as well.
How do you spell Lowell Bear's last name?
B-A-I-R.
Oh, okay. Great.
Oh, my God.
That's what I thought.
B-A-I-E-R.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what are the, I assume that in the work that you do that you've identified some threatened extinctions. What are the most, among first plants and then mammals or animals, what are the most severe threats out there?
So one of the species that I like to talk about is the Venus flytrap, because it's extremely well known, and people are always surprised to find out, A, that it's an imperiled species, and B, that it comes from the United States. I've talked to a lot of people about it, and especially young people are pretty sure that it must have come from the tropics somewhere, because it's so wild and so interesting looking, and its lifestyle is so interesting.
Right.
But it turns out that the Venus flytrap is native to coastal North Carolina and South Carolina with very specific habitat requirements. And there's a lot of threats to its habitat because of development, because of its proximity to the coast. And then with climate change and sea level rise, its habitat is further threatened. And so the Venus flytrap is a great sort of ambassador for talking about how something can be well known, but be very rare. It also can be very locally common. So if you go to Wilmington, North Carolina, people will see Venus flytrap, and it might be growing in their yard, and they'll think, oh, well, it's just this thing growing in my yard. But it's just because it's locally common doesn't mean it's globally common. It doesn't mean that it's not at risk of extinction. So the Venus flytrap is a species that I like to use as an example. There's a species of butterfly in, I think the biggest populations of it anyway, are in New York, and it's the Karner blue butterfly. And it is a globally rare species. I'm going to tell you the exact. It's a G1, so it's the most rare kind of species. And it lives in parts of New England and across sort of Ohio, Illinois area. And there's an area in Albany, New York, called the Pine Bush Preserve, where they've been managing the habitat to encourage increases in the Carter blue butterfly population. And they have had remarkable success with a little bit of work bringing this butterfly back from almost non-existent in this area to having thousands and thousands of them there. At the same time, this is a species that we were able to model potential habitat for. And based on the model, scientists were able to go out in the field to a place that the model said there should be populations and find additional populations of this butterfly, which means it's not as rare as we had thought. It's not yet out of the, funny expression, it's not yet out of the woods in terms of being secure from potentially going extinct, but it's less imperiled than it was before because we were able to find new populations. And it's also a very attractive little butterfly.
Mm-hmm. So NatureServe has, in their annual report, they have maps of the ecosystem of the U.S. and Canada. What's the importance of this of the mapping that you do?
One of the fun things, actually, about all of our annual reports is that we have put, for the past several years, maps in the... So we have our map set up, our annual report set up, so it unfolds to be essentially a poster. Mm-hmm. And we've done maps of the rare plants of the states and provinces, rare amphibians, and rare rare mammals. Mm-hmm. And our most recent annual report mapped the ecosystems of the United States. And that's a useful map because it also shows where ecosystems have been converted to something other than their natural state. Mm-hmm. Seeing all of the land area of North America that has been converted to something else, like farms and pastures or cities,
mm-hmm.
Is really useful. And seeing the patterns on the landscape of where habitats are and where they've been altered tells you things about how we use the land. And it gives people a little bit of insight into how their, the habitat that they're used to when they go outside relates to habitat in other parts of the continent. And, for geeks like me, it's also a, that would be a fun place to go kind of map, because you can see where there's different kinds of habitats that you might want to visit.
Mm-hmm. So where have you done those maps?
We do these maps for the United States and Canada, and we publish them in our annual report, which we do send to our donors, which is a great incentive to become a donor to NatureServe so that you can... get our annual report with our very cool maps on the inside.
And they are interactive maps, or is that a separate category?
That's a separate category. These are, we publish them online so that you can see them on the website, and we publish them on paper in our printed annual report. But these particular maps are not interactive. If you go to explorer.natureserve.org, which is our online encyclopedia of Earth, you can look up individual species and habitats and then look at individual states and zoom in and zoom out to see where the species are and how, and you can see actually how imperiled they are by state. So you can see where something might be common in one state and rare in another state. And there's also some information about the specific locations where these species have been found in most states.
I see. Okay, let's talk about Van Humboldt and the trips that you take. What do you do that for? What's the reason for doing that?
So The Van Humble is a camper van that I drove around in the past few years to visit with our Natural Heritage Partner programs. It is called Van Humble in homage to Von Humboldt, who is the naturalist who sort of described the modern conception of nature as a system. And there's a lovely book I mentioned before called The Invention of Nature by Andrea Wolf that is definitely really interesting because it's both an adventure and a science book. So the Van Humboldt traveled to 30-some states and half a dozen Canadian provinces to highlight some of the rare and imperiled species and habitats in those states. And on our social media, as well as on our website, we tell the story of visiting these different rare and imperiled species and try to use that as a way to engage people in thinking about the fact that 90% of Americans live within 30 miles of an imperiled species.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that almost everybody in the country in a short day trip could go visit something that is such a rare species that almost nobody else maybe has ever seen it. And so the Van Humboldt tour was an effort to sort of highlight the fact that right here in the United States and Canada, we have lots of rare and imperiled species that are really interesting and really worth protecting.
So you're targeting primarily urban areas where you can interact with a lot of people?
In a lot of cases, we were in urban areas. In some cases, we were a little more rural. For example, we went to Coyote Ridge in Fort Collins, Colorado. So it's right outside the edge of what you would consider, you know, the city proper.
Right.
And there are some globally rare plant species there that are really quite beautiful and interesting. And, you know, the residents of Fort Collins could ride their bike and go see them on any day of the week that they wanted to.
Have you been up here to Montana?
I have been to Montana.
Oh, good.
It is a beautiful, beautiful state. Really, you can't really appreciate the scale of the landscapes in a place like Montana until you go. The pictures just don't do it justice.
Right. So, do you have future plans for Van Humboldt?
We're going to continue to visit. Ultimately, the plan would be to go to all of the states and provinces and be able to highlight habitats and species in each one.
Uh-huh.
It does another thing, and that is it builds community with our natural heritage programs. Because the country is so big, the continent is so big, it's often hard to have, personal relationships with the people in the various programs. And so this is a way to build the personal relationship so that we can work really effectively together. You know, everybody's gotten pretty good at remote work these days, but it's kind of hard to substitute for actually knowing somebody in person and, you know, spending the day hiking with them and then going and having dinner or something.
So you have a publication called River Source Ecosystems of Eastern Unglaciated North America.
Wow. You have just exceeded my knowledge base there.
Okay.
I'm not going to be able to answer that question.
Okay, well, tell me about your newsletter. We did that last week, but tell me again. Put in a plug for your contact information.
Well, actually, I will talk a little bit about the river scour thing. I do know a little bit about it, but I don't know all of the deep details. River scours are really interesting habitats because they're usually have rare plants in them because they're incredibly hard places to live, and only a few things have figured out how to live in them.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a a very technical scientific paper that was published that identifies a number of river segments, over 1,000 river segments that contain river scour habitats in the eastern United States. I have visited one of these in Pennsylvania, and, you know, it's the kind of place where you and I might go and we would hop around on the rocks and not really think much of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that a lot of the plants that we might be seeing only live in that one particular area and are incredibly, incredibly rare. So river scour ecosystems are really interesting, and they're important to the aquatic life of the river and to the edge habitat around the river. But it is, that particular paper is a fairly technical paper. But for NatureServe, in addition to the annual report we were talking about, we have a newsletter that comes out fairly regularly and highlights some of the work that's being done in the network. The newsletter, of course, talks about the River Scour paper and provides links to that paper for people who want to read it. The newsletter also talks about just sort of general conservation issues and things that are happening across the United States and Canada. So if you care about biodiversity here in North America, our newsletter is a great place to keep up to date with what's going on with biodiversity in North America. We also have Instagram and LinkedIn and X and Facebook pages that we love for people to follow. And we put different things on the different platforms. Depending on which platform people prefer, they can learn about NatureServe and about biodiversity by following us on the different social media platforms. And that's a great thing to do.
And you've got a podcast.
NatureServe has a podcast called Conservation Conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find that on, you know, Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all of the other podcast networks. Plus, on NatureServe's website, you can find Conservation Conversations. Our latest one was with Caroline von Hemert, who is a biologist who, with her husband, went on a tremendous adventure all across the Pacific Northwest, from starting in Washington State and then traveling up into Alaska. And they took a 4,000-mile journey and talked about the biology of Alaska and the surrounding areas. And it's an amazing story of that. And we also talk with people who are approaching biodiversity conservation from the indigenous perspective or from individual species perspectives. There's lots of different, the big wide range of things that we talk about on Conservation Conversations.
Great. And your website address again is
natureserve.org.
Good. Okay.
You know, we were talking about the Endangered Species Act earlier. Lowell Bear, the author of that book, was on Conservation Conversations recently, and so that's a great way to get an overview of the Endangered Species Act by listening to that podcast.
Okay, well, we've run out of time once again, so again, I really, really thank you. This has been great to talk.
It was my pleasure, and thanks for your interest, and thanks for all that you do. It's really great to have you out there talking about these topics.
It's been a lot of fun. Our guest today has been Sean O'Brien, CEO of NatureServe, a nationwide organization headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to js-wilderness.com and see additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.